The Guardian.
The Guardian Football Weekly Podcast with James Richardson.
Fast-paced and informative like an Avram Grant press conference, it's Football Weekly. In today's roundup, the Premier League. Blackburn put United's title party on ice. The Kevolution continues at Newcastle. And Fulham going down and staying down, unlike John Prescott's breakfast. We preview the Champions League semis and dial up the Sidster in Spain for the word on Barcelona ahead of their United clash. From Italy, there's shock news from Roma. Totti out, the title blown, and DIC in a battle to buy the club. And in a bold new move, we finally start covering the Dutch Eredivisie. What do you mean it's just ended? All that plus your post in Football Weekly.
You're listening to Guardian Football Weekly with James Richardson.
Well, here in the pod today, have we got another pen actually? Because I might need that.
I'll give it.
I want you to have a pen.
No, I'm finished.
Hi, listeners, you join us in a bit of a stationary crisis here in near Earth orbit. Anyway, there's me, James. Kevin McCarra, welcome back, Kevin.
Hello, James.
Hi there. Your tan's holding up well. It's the trip to Blackburn this time.
Yeah, and the skin's peeling a bit as well. That's the frostbite.
Right.
To Blackburn, yeah.
Okay, he would park tails off to come shortly. Paul Doyle.
How are you doing, James?
I'm very well, and yourself?
Good, thanks.
Right, and Barry Glendenning.
Hi, James.
I'm well, and how are you?
Good, yes, right. I have a pen.
Oh, you lucky thing.
Yeah.
Now, we've got a lot, so many topics potentially to be discussed, so we'll have to be nice and disciplined today. A bit like Max Mosley. But anyway, let's start with your trip to Ewood Park, Kevin. See anything you fancy?
Yes, I thought Blackburn were terrific, except the kind of mental fatigue took over in the last few minutes as United pressed and pressed, and you saw that with no marking at the United goal. But what, by the way, at the goal, I think it's not been said enough, what a terrific header by Paul Scholes. The first header was to sort of twist his neck and cushion it and put it in perfectly for Tevez. It was a really cool touch in a difficult situation.
Paul Doyle, since you're here, can I just ask you, are you standing by your Tevez is a worse player than Dirk Kuyt?
That's not what I said, no. I said he was a very rich man's Dirk Kuyt, which means that he's slightly better than Dirk Kuyt. But that's all. I don't think he's good enough to make it at United in the long term.
You don't think so?
I think, although he scored the last-minute equaliser, he missed a lot of sitters against Blackburn at Ewood Park, as did Wayne Rooney, as usual, which just underlines my point that when Ronaldo has a bad game, which he doesn't do very often, Rooney and Tevez, the other so-called great players in the team, don't come to the fore to mask Ronaldo's underperformance the way Ronaldo often does for them.
Question from the thickie at the back. Doesn't Ronaldo's season owe so much to the fact that he has Tevez now alongside Rooney taking the pressure off him?
No, I wouldn't have.
As I say, it was a question from the thickie at the back. So now, all right, but my point, read the 1-1 draw. And United, I mean, you talk about Blackburn losing concentration at the end. United's mental toughness once again underlined by this.
Yes.
Always come back and get that goal at the end.
Also their stamina. I mean, they've really been a lot of trouble, and they dominated the second half, so I think they're looking quite fresh, which is encouraging with the Champions League coming up.
And what about the title race?
Well, Man U are doing something like a slide rule basis, aren't they? They were overjoyed for a point because it means now they can lose to Chelsea and then win if they win the last two against West Ham and Wigan, they are champions in goal difference. Right. But that's how tight it's become.
They won't want to lose that game and count on their goal difference, though.
No, they'll be thinking to themselves, why shouldn't we be the team that ends this almost infinite unbeaten run that Chelsea have had at home in the Premier League? That will be Ferguson's motivational talk once they get back from Barcelona, I would think.
We'll talk more about Barcelona.
So he won't go and set his stall out for the draw, as he has done in the past in big games?
He'll be saying to his players, I mean, let's give a peak performance here and show that we are champions. That might be done by winning 1-0. I'm not suggesting that they'll decorate the game with sort of gay, colourful football, but I think he'll think that's winnable against Chelsea.
I think they'll lose. I think they'll be beaten up the way they were at Blackburn for much of the game, the way they were at Bolton, West Ham.
You're on the record as Chelsea going to beat Man United this weekend, yeah?
Yeah.
I mean,
that could change depending on what happens during the weekend, like if Chelsea lose lots of players through injury or something.
Right. Do you not think, Paul, that Chelsea are not quite like that anymore? They're a bit more vulnerable at home. They haven't been losing, but they aren't impregnable in defence. That's my point.
Certainly, they're not impregnable.
Wigan scoring against them in the 90th minute.
Chelsea have lots of failings, yeah, there's no doubt about that. But so do United, and I think Chelsea will beat them.
Interesting, but moving on, the second city derby. Aston Villa 5-1 over Birmingham City. How about Villa for a start? That's what, 15 goals for one against in their last three games, admittedly against sides down at the bottom. But they are on fire all of a sudden. They've got Everton coming up next weekend. And what's happened to them?
Well, there's a lot of speed in the team, isn't there? And
yes.
They've not got a big squad, but they're back in a sort of spell where they've recovered and got fresh again.
Right.
And I think the Ashley Young and Agbon Lahore and so on, that kind of pace and movement is going to be very difficult for a cumbersome visitors like Birmingham, who do okay at St Andrews, but their away record's nothing to boast about. I think really, if you read Alec McLeish's comments in the papers this morning, he wasn't expecting a 5-1 defeat, but he had written off this game and is looking more towards what he can do at St Andrews against Liverpool.
Right.
The last home game against Blackburn.
Well, it's an interesting run-in for the, I guess, three sides. I think you'd have to say that Fulham are largely down now, are they not?
Yes, you would. They are pretty much doomed after getting beaten by the Liverpool second team on Saturday. Birmingham, Reading, Bolton, all still
Reading's
in trouble.
Reading's the one you worry about, though, isn't it? I mean,
well, I still,
they've lost their last three and they just look abject.
I don't think Sunderland are safe yet, to be honest. Borough, I think, have more about them and they have the same number of points. Borough, Wigan and Sunderland are all in 36 points, but Sunderland are far from safe as far as I'm concerned.
Well, you've got two spots largely filled in Derby and Fulham. Then you've got Birmingham, who are in the third spot at the moment. 1 point above them are Reading. And you got Bolton, what, 1 point above them?
What, Bolton and Reading have 32 points
both
each.
On the same point.
It's
again.
Intriguing that the Reading go to Wigan next week. I think in the context of the whole relegation issue, that's a really daunting game for them. Wigan will see that as the day when they clinch their survival in the top flight, won't they?
We'll be slightly concerned about Steve Coppell's thinking at the moment. He sent out a weird side against...
Was that not a punitive selection?
Well, it was punitive, but all he did was punish himself because they got absolutely hammered.
A bit like Ashley Young, you think?
They lost 2-0. And they should have lost. They could easily have lost 10 or 15 nil. And that's not an exaggeration. Arsenal's wastefulness in front of goal sort of kept the score down.
The problem was, though, that his first team, if you want to call it that, were just as bad against Fulham the previous week.
Yeah,
and to an extent, I think the criticisms that have been levelled at Wenger since Arsenal's collapse, you could also level them at Steve Coppell. He's a bit too dogmatic. He has this brick-by-brick approach, slowly build for the long term. And you think if in January he had just gone out and splashed a little bit of cash, they could have solidified their position.
He said that himself in his post-match comments, like... that he should have bought in January and chose not to. He chose to trust the players that had done so well last season, and many of them have let him down. You know, so Kevin Doyle hasn't been scoring goals. He scored a lot last year. Stephen Hunt, another Irishman, was dropped for the first time this season on Saturday. Like the team Coppell sent out on Saturday to face Arsenal, I think had seven changes from the one that got hammered by Fulham. And it was men against boys.
Mm-hmm. Now, top managerial work, meanwhile, going on Tyneside. Kevin Keegan has forced various critics' words right back down their throats.
No, he hasn't.
Yes, he has.
He hasn't.
Look at the numbers.
Hold on. I'm going to go and get the reins of my high horse, bring him into the pod and clamber
you
aboard.
You can't argue
here.
With the results, Barry.
You can argue with
they're
the results.
They're scoring goals. They're not conceding goals. And this is Newcastle.
Who have they beaten? Nobody. They've beaten nobody above them in the table.
Well, they couldn't beat these nobodies before, and they used to concede goals.
I have a big problem with this. I mean, it's really bugging me. Paul wrote a very good blog after the game yesterday. Sunderland were outclassed yesterday, and I'm a Sunderland fan, and, I've no problem admitting they were outclassed. But then we had all these Muppets coming on our blog going, oh, this is going to ram the words of... pardon?
Nothing.
This is going to ram the words of all the Guardian journalists who criticised Keegan and, made spiteful comments about him when he was appointed. Right. First of all, I'm pretty certain that when he was appointed, we all said it was good to have him back in the game and that it would be nothing if not entertaining.
Right.
But in the meantime, Newcastle have beaten Sunderland, Reading, Spurs, Fulham, and they've drawn with Birmingham and Portsmouth. And this, now all the Newcastle fans are on our blogs losing the run of themselves, as usual.
This is compared to what's gone before. And the point is, in addition to those results, they've actually looked like a coherent and dangerous team. And so, the caricature of Keegan was, he'd get them playing with a smile on their face and they'd be full of enthusiasm. But there's more to it than that. They actually have shape and purpose now.
I think the paradox, too, is that Keegan is meant to be sort of idealistic and Allardyce is pragmatic. Newcastle I've conceded 58 goals, and a large part of that was down to Sam Allardyce. Recently, they've been quite tight under Keegan. Yeah. Maybe because they're attacking and just pinning the opposition back. Who knows?
It's also, they are, as you say, looking defensively sound, largely with players that Allardyce bought, and they're good players, but he didn't have them playing well. Habib Bey has been excellent for Newcastle this season, but he's not having to smash long crossfield balls the way Allardyce instructed him to. He's actually becoming part of the attack. He's playing balls into feet, and he's very good going forward. And even Jose Enrique is starting to look good.
The other things, I know we're all waiting for next season, as we should, to see them properly tested. Yeah. But this idea that would not have occurred to many of us to play Owen deeper has been very effective.
Yeah, give him a free rein. He goes all over the place. And he's now, as I said in that blog, developing his game the way Nicola Anelka had to do many years ago. He previously just relied on pace.
But to give Keegan Kett credit, I would never have thought of playing Owen deeper. I wouldn't have thought he could play the one
Kevin,
touch
come on. If your job is to think about Keegan, how to line a football
genius.
Team up,
no,
7 days a week.
But I didn't realise.
Just move a few magnets around
the ball. I wouldn't have thought that Owen's gift for linking up was good enough to play in that position, but he does play it well.
He has the benefit of training sessions.
But the point is, maybe when you do train with him every day, it's an obvious move. But the point is, people dissed Keegan to the extent of saying he wouldn't even do this. Right. You just send out 11 players and say, go on, lads, do your best.
Well, fair enough. All right, well, as I say, plenty to talk about today, so let's move.
Sorry, I'm not finished yet.
You are.
I'm not.
You're finished, you're washed up.
We also had these Newcastle fans on our blog. They've been coming out, as well as announcing that, you know, they're going to sweep all before them next season.
Well, they've had to put up with a lot. I think it's understandable, the excitement.
But they're excited over very little. Sunderland have beaten better teams than they have.
You can only beat the teams that are in front of you.
And yet they're saying that
the
only reason Sunderland are going to stay up is that there are worse teams in the Premier League. But you could say the same thing about Manchester United or Arsenal.
Yep.
Anyway,
which better team did Sunderland beat?
They beat Portsmouth. They beat Aston Villa.
Fair
and
enough.
They should have beaten Aston Villa twice. They were robbed the first time.
All fair points, Barry. Now, moving along. Good, okay.
Yes, you may proceed.
Right.
I'm finished now. Rant over.
Is Roy Keane a better manager than Kevin Keegan?
I think he is, yes. He's achieved more in the game in management than Kevin Keegan has.
Second in the Premier League?
He brought a team from the bottom of the Championship to the top of the Championship in one season. And he's going to keep that team up. And apparently that's not good enough. He's made some shocking buys, as his critics never tire of reminding everyone. But show me a manager in any team in England that hasn't made some shocking buys. But he's also made some very good buys, which he doesn't get much credit for.
Can we say goodbye to this topic and move on to one of the others that jostled for
attention? He gets lots of
attention.
Credit for his goodbyes.
No, I'm not going to.
He does. He gets lots of credit.
Liverpool are playing Chelsea on Tuesday at Anfield.
Are they?
And it's a familiar pairing in Champions League terms. Chelsea have had the benefit of the weekend off. And so have many of Liverpool's players.
Yes.
Is it going to go differently this time?
I think it may very well do. I think the advantage of playing the second leg at Anfield in each case was huge and quite wonderful to be there, to be fair, especially the first occasion. It was an extraordinary evening. But yes, if it comes to it, Chelsea have extra time at Stamford Bridge. But I also am fascinated by the comments of Avram Grant at the weekend, kind of implying that Mourinho got too much into the chess game.
Well, which comments were these? Was it yes, no, or maybe?
No, he spoke to the Sundays, who are a much more civilised bunch of people, and managers are prepared to talk to them.
Oh, yeah.
Because see, they have all week the Sundays to prepare and be gentle and analyse things.
We all know how little those lads do. Yeah.
I actually was one in my youth, so never mind. But to get back to Avram Grant, he implied basically that Mourinho had got too much involved in strategy and tactics and the two legs of the tie. I think he's more or less saying to the players, look, we do perfectly fine at Anfield in the Premier League. Let's just go and play it like a normal game and get on with it.
Right.
And we have a stronger squad and we'll get through. And I think given the home advantage in second leg, I think it will be the case this time.
Mm. It's interesting how both clubs have got a certain amount of turmoil going on behind the scenes. Obviously Liverpool, there's been all this business of one side trying to fire Parry, the other side trying to keep Parry as a way of showing how much better they are than the other side, etc., etc., etc. And Benitez caught in the middle, and now he's emerged as the guy, rather than being the guy who's going to get his marching orders, he's now, well, I'm not sure if I will be staying around. But meanwhile, at Chelsea, Avram Grant, that extraordinary press conference last Thursday, is that the prelude to his departure? Is that kind of official now?
People say yes, he is going. You think, could he really be replaced if he ended up winning the European Cup for the first time in Chelsea's history?
You couldn't replace him if he wins the European Cup. Possibly move him upstairs or something into some honorary.
You could relocate him.
Right.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of Chelsea fans might be quite nervous that if their team win the Champions League, which I'm sure they all want, then Grant will probably stay. But most of them don't want him to stay. Mm-hmm. So I don't think the press conference was any big deal. It was, you know, sort of childish behaviour on his part. But then journalists do ask a lot of stupid questions at these things, and I'm sure managers get sick and tired of answering them.
You know the strange thing, James, what normally happens is they send out the assistant manager when they don't want to face the press. I don't know why Grant went along and did it.
Well, didn't he want to send a message?
Yeah, but he just looked stupid.
The only message he sent is, I'm an asshole. You know,
People don't always make the right decisions, but I think
But it didn't say much of a judgment. He made himself look stupid.
Right.
And that's never a good thing, really, is it?
It's not the end of the world, but hasn't done irreparable damage to his career.
Well, that's good then. Now, for United's semi-final clash with Barcelona, we're going to be talking to Sid Lowe in a moment or two. That's coming up in part two of Football Weekly.
Hello, I'm Matt Wells, and on the latest Media Talk podcast, the BBC begins its search for a new radio boss, but does early favourite Helen Bowden really want the job? Also in the show, the Independent's editor-in-chief Simon Kellner tells us about the new regime. Plus, we look back on the end of an era, well, the end of a series at least, as this generation of skins gets all grown up. It's all on the latest Media Talk at guardian.co.uk/audio.
Welcome to Football Weekly, Sid Lowe in Spain.
Hello.
Hi, Sid, how are you doing?
I'm not too bad, thank you. How are you?
Excellent. We're all very well here in the pod. And looking forward to hearing your latest news. For listeners who are just joining us, Sid is in Madrid, where all sorts of excitement's been happening, like rain, his non-use of a folding bicycle, gifted to him by Real Madrid. And Real Madrid's pretty much certain conquest of the Spanish title by now. What else? Ronald Koeman about to get the boot from Valencia?
Yeah, all sorts of things have happened this weekend. I mean, if we go start with Real Madrid, I suppose, is the obvious one to say. They pretty much tied up the league title. They beat Racing Santander last night and played reasonably well. I mean, it was a very good away performance. Had scored the first goal and then looked comfortable despite the fact that Racing had a couple of half-hearted chances for a penalty and a couple of decent chances. Madrid looked strong, and it means they now only need to win two games of the remaining five to guarantee the league title. And of course, the excitement now isn't based on will Madrid win the league or not. It's will they win it in time to force poor old Barcelona to come to the Bernabeu with three games to go in the season and have to stand there and give Madrid a guard of honour as they come on the pitch, as is the tradition with league title winners.
What's the story on second place? Villarreal had a win on the weekend, yeah, whereas Barcelona didn't, as usual.
Yeah, Barca didn't, as usual. They've only won one in eight now, Barcelona. 0-0 against Espanyol at the Camp Nou. A game against probably the worst Catalan derby for years, in the sense of the fact that the two teams are going into it. Barcelona with one win in seven. Espanyol had been beaten four games on the trot without even scoring and had got, I think, one win in nine going into it. And the game was pretty much what you'd expect given those wonderful kind of markers beforehand. Dreadful. The first half was really, really poor. Barcelona improved a lot in the second when Messi and Iniesta came on, and of course they had a big hope for the Man United game. It wasn't pretty.
No, but he's only just back from injury, so how fit is he? How smooth did he look?
Well, one of the things about Messi is he plays at a ludicrous speed. He plays he's much quicker than anyone else on the pitch, and he's one of these bizarre players who almost seems quicker with the ball than without it. His speed is so, so good. His acceleration is incredible. And it doesn't look like there's any problem from that point of view. I'd be tempted to suggest, really, actually, that Messi's problem comes when he's played lots of games, not when he's just come back from having played none. Mm. Now, obviously, Barca don't want to run the risk of him breaking down, but I think he will start against Manchester United. I think there's a very clear sense that that Messi is not just Barca's great hope, but pretty much their only hope. One of the headlines yesterday was brilliant. One of the headlines yesterday said, what we need is 11 Messis. Given that he's only 5'4", I think that would probably be a bit of a disaster in goal. but otherwise, you know, the sentiment, you could understand what they were getting at. And there was another headline, which I think was really telling. That the thing about Messi is Messi makes us dream. Unfortunately, the rest of them just give us nightmares.
Sid, can I ask you about Barcelona? I know they kept clean sheets against Schalke in both legs, didn't they, in the previous round? Is there a chance they could hold United? I mean, the defence is not brilliant, but they've got Yaya Touré in front of it. Could they be a bit more resilient than we expect?
Well, in the Champions League, and it's one of the things that Gudjonsson was saying this weekend, that in the Champions League, they've been much, much better defensively, and that has meant that when they've scored a goal or two goals, it's been enough to take them through. And that perhaps their psychological problem in the league is that they score a goal and then they concede, and they score again and they concede again. He said, we've got this block which makes us think, crikey, we've got to score two or three here to have any chance of going through, whereas in the Champions League, it's very different. Now, there is two ways of looking at it. One of them is that their attitude and their defensive organisation is better in the Champions League. The other way, and frank, frankly, this is the way I see it, is that their defence have been better in the Champions League because they played Celtic and Schalke. And it's not that their defence has been better, it's that those two teams haven't been able to score the goals. And Schalke in particular, in the second half of the first leg and the first half of the second leg, absolutely dominated Barcelona, but just couldn't finish to save their lives.
Peter Mentu said that Celtic scored two in Glasgow while playing miserably.
So. Exactly. And even then, it wasn't enough. And there is a really keen feeling, I think, in Catalonia that until now, Barca have got this far because they've played teams that frankly aren't really very good. And that now they're up against a genuinely good side. Now, obviously, there's that little bit of that tinge of hope underneath, which is, well, maybe this will finally bring the best out of a team that's been pretty indolent for most of the season. But to be honest, if the two teams play to their current form, Manchester United will absolutely batter Barcelona, but we all know it doesn't quite work like that.
Mm. Although Barcelona don't seem to be going into this in the best of states, also from the point of view of the kind of locker room harmony. Samuel Eto'o making various comments over the weekend that were picked up here about if they don't win something, he's leaving.
I mean, Samuel Eto'o's always had a massive gob and a very short fuse, and this is, you know, yet another episode on that. But now it's all about him. Let's not beat about the bush with this. It's all about Eto'o. He's very, very much a spoiled child. But he's a spoiled child with the right attitude for Barcelona, in that he's desperate to win. He's almost pathologically driven in the way he plays. And when he's spoken out before, it's tended to be to deliver the right kind of message, normally in the wrong way, but the right kind of message. So, for example, he complained about the fact that Ronaldinho wasn't training. He complained about the fact that people were sniping at each other behind each other's backs. And that was the right message. This time, on the eve of a game like this, and Barcelona this week launched a campaign, Everyone Together with Barcelona. They all stood behind this lovely banner saying, Everyone Together with Barcelona. And at the same time, Eto'o is coming out and saying, well, I tell you what, if we don't win anything, I'm out of here. And it's reminiscent a bit of, I remember Ronaldo coming out when Madrid were due to play Arsenal a couple of years ago and saying this on the eve of the game, and it just does not help. And as if Eto'o wasn't a guy the rest of the squad don't trust anyway, they're going to trust him even less now.
Mm. Well, there you go. All sorts of transfer questions we could ask about Barcelona and I guess the ongoing Ronaldinho to Milan saga, which is currently very much on hold because Milan, I think, were surprised when Barca asked for some proper money for it. But probably will go through in the end, do you think, Sid, still?
I think that's the most likely. Obviously, what Barca are doing, as we talked about this last week, and this hasn't changed. Barca want as many clubs involved as possible because they want an auction. That is why they are negotiating with Manchester City. Now, I still don't think it will happen, him going to Manchester City, but Barca are delighted to have Taxi and Shinawatra throwing his money around because they think it might make Berlusconi do the same.
No, I was just I was pulled up on this last week by, and Kevin's nodding because of course he knows this, but DN Wong posted in saying, just a quick note to Jimbo that Shinawatra is pronounced with a silent ra, Shinawat, or Shinawat. Jimbo has a taxing job, so wouldn't want him getting tongue-tied. That's DN Wong, he's got a bit of a talent for that kind of thing. There you go, yeah, Sid.
Nice. Unlike yourself.
Hey, good one. Now,
what do you think Shinawat?
Yes.
Do to you for getting his name wrong. not that I'm suggesting he has some kind of dodgy history.
Well, indeed not. Now, moving along, Koeman for the chop, quickly. Although Rosemary might be better. I've got a note here on colouring it. But anyway, Ronald Koeman out of the picture at Valencia.
Well, Ronald Koeman out of the picture at Valencia. As we speak, he is still Valencia coach. By the time the pod is up and people are listening to it, I suspect he won't be. There will be a board meeting today. Quite brilliantly, the president last night, Agustin, what's his surname? Moreira. Come on, I nearly forgot then. Who is just the puppet president, really, because the major shareholder, Juan Soler, is still in charge. He said, we won't be making any decisions in the heat of the moment, and we must wait till tomorrow when we had a board meeting, because every decision we make is agreed by the board. What he means to say is the board rings up the owner and says, boss, what should we do? Mm. And he says something, and go, oh, we agree. Good idea. Now, today they'll speak to the owner, will almost certainly sack Koeman. There's one slight possible problem, which is it will cost him €8 million to do so. But he is officially the worst coach ever at Mestalla, in that they have the worst home record in their history. They've only picked up 16 of a possible 66 points in the league. They might have won the Copa del Rey, but that's another stick with which to beat him, because the players, who are very much stabbing him in the back, have let it be known that they won the Copa del Rey because they did things their way, right. Not his.
Well, there you go. Adios.
Of course, it's worth mentioning, if he was manager in Newcastle, their fans would be delighted with that sort of terrible form.
Well, that's it. And obviously, one of the things in all of this, and Valencia's fans, and I'm reluctant to say that all of Valencia's fans, but a big chunk of Valencia's fans, frankly, don't deserve anything else. These are the fans that were chanting for Benitez to go, and then he led them to two league titles, who were charging Kike Sanchez-Flores to go, and then about 6 weeks later said, oh, hang on a minute, Kike, come back, who were chanting the cup final, Koeman, go now, when after the semi-final they'd been chanting, Koeman, you can stay.
Right. Now, one difference with the Newcastle scenario is the fact that Valencia do stand a very real chance going down. They're, what, 2 points away now with, what, five to play, is it?
Yeah, they're 2 points away with five to play, and their five to play are really genuinely tough. They play Osasuna at home next weekend, which is a really, really big one, because Osasuna could be in trouble as well. Then they play Barcelona, Zaragoza and Atletico, which are all tough, and Levante, which is theoretically easy, but of course there's a City derby. So you just feel that Valencia, all right, they definitely have the players to survive. But the way things are right now, you wouldn't necessarily bet on it. But no. That is, of course, why they'll sack Koeman, because they think the only way to get action from the players who've let it be very clear that they don't like Koeman is to get rid of Koeman and say, come on then, boys, run yourselves for a little while.
Well, Sid, you know, that's all fascinating. And thank you for bringing us up to date on all of that. A quick note on our word of the week, which was reintroduced by Paul Dore last week, and with spectacular failure of the reigning cats and dogs. Various people, Simon says in NASA, saying raining cats and dogs, surely llover a cantaros, literally to rain jugs.
That's right. Yeah, that's the one.
Or here's El Peña in Plymouth, exotically, saying, I prefer caer chuzos de punta, which sounds rather rude, but it actually means literally icicles or pikes falling with their points down.
Very good.
Yeah, that's a handy phrase, listeners, when you're in Madrid where it rains all the time and bicycling is absolutely out of the question. Very good, Sid.
Bicycling is out of the question for useless people like me, yeah.
A quick prediction score-wise for the Barcelona-Man United game?
It's hard to believe that there won't be goals in it.
Quick prediction?
I think Barcelona will win 2-1. Sorry, that wasn't quick enough.
Oh, that's right. 2-1 for Barcelona.
2-1.
Wow, Nick. Yeah,
they'll then lose at Old Trafford.
Right, OK. Well, that keeps it interesting, though. Hey? Nice one. Sid, thank you very much indeed. And we'll speak to you on Thursday, I hope.
Yep, I hope so.
Ta-ra! Moving along in the wide world of European, etc. Dutch!
Hooray.
Dutch football! Hooray! Have at thee! Posted in last week and said, when, or words to the effect, are we going to have some proper coverage of Holland's Eredivisie, that's how it's pronounced, folks, which, once again, at that point, was heading towards a last day of the season down to the wire title battle climax. You remember last year, PSV won it for the third time in a row because they had a superior goal difference, having beaten somebody 5-1, except it was Vitesse, I think, wasn't it? Anyway, it was all very exciting. Three teams could have won it. Barry Glendening?
Yes.
Would you like to slur your S's and tell us all about what happened this time around?
Well, I'm a huge fan of the Eredivisie, as you know.
Right, Eredivisie.
Yeah,
that's right.
And it finished yesterday.
Yes.
PSV won their fourth title in succession. Oof. And yes, the PSV squad toured the city in an open trailer pulled by a truck to the Stadhuisplein, where they mounted the City Hall balcony to be greeted by Mayor Rob van Gijsdel.
That's incredible knowledge, Barry.
It is. I'm good. I'm right. Nothing if not thorough. Before right. Showing off the trophy to an estimated 40,000 fans.
Okay.
So they beat Ajax into second place.
Right. Ajax, though, beat somebody, was it Heracles? 5-1.
Yes. They beat Heracles 5-1.
Am I remembering wrongly, or are PSV not been in terrible financial trouble for the past few years despite this four championships in a row? Is that
be right, Kevin.
They had all sorts of
Jimbo.
Didn't have to sell bits of land and so on to bring in money.
The centre circle.
Yeah. It's like sponsorship.
One penalty area.
Maybe I'm just inventing all this, but I'm sure.
No, and why weren't Phillips able to come in and sort them out?
Well, Phillips had to sell cassettes and videos and everything.
Oh, right.
Yes. I think those days are gone. For the companies just pour in money. Willy-nilly.
Oh dear. But they have had a bit of a miserable time. They were beaten by Fiorentina in the UEFA Cup. They got knocked out of the Dutch league for fielding a suspended player, which is a bit of an oversight.
I think beating Spurs, though, was a good good effort.
Well, there you go. And there you go. Well,
so
done,
they
PSV.
They won by 3 points. Excelsior go down. Interestingly, in the course of my less than extensive research of this topic, there's now playoffs and stuff to see who gets the other two teams who get relegated. Mm. And as far as I can tell, the team that comes ninth in the Dutch second division now have a chance to get promoted, which seems rather odd.
It does seem strange. Indeed. And well done to Seth Vergozen. Is that how you pronounce that? Kevin, you might have come across him.
That's correct, Jess. That's his PSV manager, and his last game in charge. He's retiring now to go off and tend to his daffodils and whatnot.
Right, you've been
his
tending
tulips.
To daffodils, haven't you?
I was gardening yesterday. Right. I'm knackered after and in a lot of pain.
Right.
But you, I know you thought my green fingers were down to some sort of venereal infection or whatever. But
I thought no such thing. Is that enough Dutch coverage to sate
so,
our
for
appetite?
This season? Yes.
Well, listeners, if you have more to add to that, do post in.
And if anyone wants to correct probably my huge error in the relegation promotion sort of thing.
Can I correct something?
Yes.
Just
one thing.
Must you really?
No, when PSV knocked Spurs out of the UEFA Cup, it was bandied about as proof that the Premier League doesn't have strength and depth. It's just about the big four. Mm. But Spurs were about 15th or 16th in the Premier League at that time, and I don't think there's any other league in Europe that could have taken the Dutch champions to penalties.
How do you work that one out? Serie A is a fourth place team.
The fourth place team, not the 15th place team.
Isn't the point, though, that they were revitalised by Wander Ramos, who inherited a very expensive squad with guys like Berbatov and 15th was a...
15th place team took the serial Dutch champions all the way to penalties.
What happened to the 5th place team, Everton, in the UEFA Cup?
Can't remember.
Fiorentina. Beaten in penalties by Fiorentina.
The 4th place team in Serie A.
But if you want to embarrass England, what about Rangers getting to the semi-final having spent almost nothing, while English clubs have spent tens of millions and gone nowhere near it in the UEFA Cup?
Richard Bolton could have...
Scottish club football is the best in Europe. We've already established
that. But if you've got no money, you have to do a bit of work and get the best out of your players.
Paul Dogg, can I dangle France in front of you as a way of bringing you back online?
Sorry, yes.
If you look at page 5 of your schedule...
I don't have a schedule.
Right, okay.
I didn't get
it
one.
It says France. Now, PSG are in all sorts of trouble.
Yes. Well, specifically one sort, relegation.
But plenty of it.
Plenty of it. Their match against away to Caen at the weekend was touted as the biggest match in the club's history, and they were expecting a big performance to go and win at Caen, who are no great shakes. And they lost 3-0.
They are no history.
PSG. Well, there's 4 games left. Apparently the club reckon that they need to win 3 of those 4, given that they've only won 1 of their last 12. That doesn't look very likely.
Wow.
They weren't helped by the fact that Lens won at the weekend, so now PSG are 3 points adrift.
3 points adrift.
Of safety. They've got a big match in 2 weeks against Toulouse, who are the team 3 points away from them. Started the season in the Champions League, but have plummeted since then.
Paul Le Guin, so due for the chop?
They say that somebody, either he's going to be chopped or somebody's going to be brought in above him to help him.
Right, help.
Louis Fernandez, apparently.
Oh, okay.
Or even Gerard Houllier.
Crikey.
Brian Robson.
Woof. I've done woof again. Sorry about that, everyone.
Yeah, you were barking like a dog last week. What was that all about? I meant to bring it up in the actual pod. I didn't get around to it. And then notice all the bloggers did it for me. What the hell? What's wrong with you?
Now, Jimmy Jamesing.
Have you had your jabs?
I have. Great to hear Paul Doyle back in the pod. I do have a question for Paul. It appears to me that an extraordinary number of amateur clubs get to the final stages of the French Cup, with Calais making the final in 2000. Why is that?
Well, they actively encouraged lower league teams to get their... They gave them... when they were drawn against bigger teams, they always got to play at home.
Right.
They've done away with that system now, but that was one way that they started it. Secondly, the bigger teams often feel weak in sides. Well, mainly it's because the gap between the lower divisions and the big divisions in France isn't as big as it is in England, for example.
Excellent answer. Okay, Phil 90 wants to know about Grégoire Coupe possibly being benched in favour of Sébastien Frey this summer for France. Frey's in amazing form.
Well, he wasn't in amazing form for France when he was given a chance there in a recent friendly against, I can't remember who, he made a howler. France have
much
big problems in the goalkeeping
I'm
position.
I'm more of a
wolf
person myself. Sorry, Paul.
Sorry, I didn't.
Howler, wolfing. Duh.
Now, okay.
It's got that stage, hasn't it?
Kunis Unite wants to know why Mexer is in a regular start of the French national team, given that Thuram seems to be. And he's not getting any younger.
But Thuram and Gallas are playing well there so far. And Mexer, in the past, has had disciplinary problems.
Thuram did damn well against England. Or maybe that reflects in England more than Thuram.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, now, still to come from our European cousins, we've got a quick word from Raphael Honigstein on Bayern Munich's drama this week in the German Cup final. And all sorts of excitements from Serie A, and I mean it, this week. Plus your post, of course. All that to come before you can successfully complete this week's Football Weekly. The final part of Football Weekly begins with a bang as we dial up Raphael Honigstein of the Süddeutsche Zeitung. Raphael, German Cup final, Bayern Munich, Borussia Dortmund. Exciting?
Very exciting. Extra time. Another. Doesn't that sound convincing?
No, not at all.
Raphael, let's try that again. Exciting?
I'll leave it in. That's great.
I like it a bit more.
Exciting,
so Raphael. Tell the truth.
Right. Come on, it was won in extra time. Luca Toni. Oh dear, have you fallen off your chair with the drama of it?
Right, I'm just leaving my house.
It's not that serious, Rafael. There's still a future for you. Listen,
need more, right. More serenity.
Right, okay. Now listen, Luca Toni, he scored two goals, yes?
He did score two goals. I think it's now something like 35 and 41 this season for him.
Wow.
It's been absolutely fantastic and well worth the €10 million that Bayern paying him every year.
A bargain. Oof.
He's by far the most expensive player ever in the Bundesliga. Currency prices, he'd even be the best paid player in the Premier League, and you'd have to say that he's well worth the money. He's just been absolutely sensational.
I think he scored 8 in the last 4 games, and he's keeping Bayern Munich on course for a potential treble, of course, because they've got the German Cup final. The Bundesliga looks in the bag, yes?
Bundesliga's in the bag. They've got 10 points advantage over Bremen. They could win it on Sunday at home to Stuttgart, with other results permitting. And, of course, they got the Cup in the bag, as it were, and a very decent chance in the UEFA Cup, where they're meeting Zenit St. Petersburg on Thursday.
Indeed they are. Well, we'll talk maybe a little bit more about that on Thursday, but so they're ready for a return to the top flight of the European game. Do you think after their absence from the Champions League they're going to come back and be a real contender next time around?
I think they've got a good chance. It'd be very interesting to see what Klinsmann can do, because they'll always have they're almost in a way will have their second season of transition. You know, this was the first season with a very new team with lots of money being spent on superstars, which traditionally has not been the Bayern way to do things. And of course, next season with Klinsmann coming in and supposed to change a lot of things in all sorts of areas, with new coaches coming in and new policies when it comes to speaking to the press and allowing fans to watch training and all sorts of things. It'll be a second interesting season, and I think there'll be a few question marks in the Champions League, especially when it comes to some of the younger players who have never played there. And you know, interesting enough, of course, neither Frank Ribéry nor Luca Toni, who've been the outstanding players, have ever played in the Champions League either. So
right.
it'll be very interesting. But I think the most sentimental story about all of last weekend is that Oliver Kahn, who's 38, in his last ever season, seems to go out with a bang. All the players ran towards him after the final whistle to celebrate with him. He'd made a very important save in extra time against Kringer to keep Bayern in that game before Luca Toni won it. And it seems that him, together with Volkmar Hitzfeld, who's sort of been a partnership almost in their terms of determination and the experience, will both leave the club with 3 titles, which is quite amazing.
Right, indeed. Any word, just lastly, are they going to be splashing the cash? Are they going to be Bayern in big style again this summer?
Well, Uli Hoeneß, the general manager, has said they're not going to repeat last year's exploit where they spent €70 million. But I think they've obviously bought already Borowski, German international. He'll come on a free transfer. And they are very closely linked with some people who really know what they're talking about with the bid for Mathieu Flamini, who's of course available for free as well. And they are in a position to put a lot of money on the table and even outbid the likes of Arsenal. So I think there's a good chance he might actually come.
Crikey. Oh, no, Barry.
Rafa, I noticed this morning in our website's always spookily accurate rumour mill that Frank Ribéry has been linked with Chelsea. Do you think he'll stay at Bayern or move elsewhere?
Yeah, I saw that as well. I don't think they will be tempted to sell him. I think, you know, a lot of teams say, or a lot of clubs say, well, this player will not go, come what may. But Bayern are actually in a position where they mean it. And I don't think that Chelsea would be in a position to offer anything that would make sense to them, even in monetary terms. And I think it's a bit of a smokescreen. I think the real reason why Frank Arnesen and Rainer Bonhoff, the Chelsea scout, were at their game was to look at Philipp Lahm, who's the Bayern left-back but can also play as right-back. He's only got 1 year on his contract and he's stalling the negotiations. And I think that Chelsea, who were very close to making a bid during the Euros, during the World Cup, will come in for him again after the Euros. So I think that was the real reason they were there.
Just on Ribéry, maybe Bayern don't want to sell him, but he does have a history of demanding moves and getting them. When he was at Galatasaray, for example, and he wanted to leave, he just got on a plane and left Turkey and said, I'm not coming back. And there wasn't much Galatasaray could do about it.
Yeah, you're right. But he did that because Galatasaray hadn't paid his wages for 3 months. There was a clause in his contract saying that if the money hasn't come after 90 days or 3 months, he can actually go. And that's exactly what he did. I don't think he'd be in a similar position at Bayern. And the thing that he wants is, of course, respect, which he always is big on. He wants to be loved, and of course he wants the money. And I think
what we all want.
Yes, exactly. And I think that Bayern will up his wages quite dramatically over the summer, and just make sure that at least we'll have him another couple of seasons. He's still very young as well. We shouldn't forget. So
yeah. I mean, he militated for a move from Marseille as well. He said he'd only ever leave to play for the club in the Champions League, and then he went to Bayern, who were in the UEFA Cup.
Well, they'll be in the Champions League next year.
My word. Well, that's sort of a fascinating roundup of possible transfer moves in and out of Bayern. Thank you very much for that, Raphael.
My pleasure.
Ours. And we look forward to speaking to you again soon.
Okay.
Thanks.
Okay. Bye.
Good to hear him feeling so well.
And to be fair to Raphael, yes, we don't get many predictions right in this pod, but I remember at the start of the season, he said Bayern Munich would win all around them this season and, you know, sweep all before them, and he was dead right.
Indeed. Now, moving along to Serie A, where it's fairly easy to predict that Inter are going to win the title, because on the weekend they beat Torino away. They were absolutely awful, but Torino were even more absolutely awful, and so they got a 1-0 win. And Roma, meanwhile, on Saturday, drew at home to Livorno. Not only did they draw and lose the title race, pretty much, because it's now 6 points the gap with four to go, but they also lost Francesco Totti, who basically collapsed about 33 minutes in, clutching his right knee. He's done the crochet and anterior crochet ligaments. He's out for, well, estimates vary between 4 and 6 months, but certainly this season, possibly a good part of next season as well. And you just start to add up the number of days that he's out for that club, and it is beginning to get...
What age is Totti?
He's 31. But he's looking a little bit worn out. I mean, he says he's going to be back stronger than ever, as is customary in these cases, but he just is already looking a little bit physically worn out.
He wasn't in great shape. Shouldn't the club have been protecting him anyway? I mean, they've been sending him out, but he's not really been right.
No, and indeed, he was feeling his knee all the way through this game. This is his first game back after several weeks out. He obviously missed the Manchester United games. I think that's the thing. He's such a key player for them, and he exerts so much influence that the thing is always just to, you know, when he can play, you know, when he can grit his teeth and soldier on, they would ask him to do that.
In the paper this morning, more talk of Mourinho going to Inter and buying particular players, obvious ones like Drogba and so on.
Right, and Lampard as well.
And Lampard.
Yeah, because that's what they need at Inter. But yeah, I mean, this story's been going around for a while, and Moratti certainly has the money to spend. The big story, though, at the moment is the fact that Roma appear to be on the verge of being taken over, or maybe they're not. Have the Sensi family, who run the club, shot themselves in the foot by asking for more money just when the deal was about to go through. George Soros, who's worth, I think, about 8 or 9 billion, which is obviously a fairly big difference to you and me, was about to sign for a 250 million euro purchase of the club. But on the crucial moment, Roma have gone back to him and said no, they got an offer in from DIC, the people who wanted to buy Liverpool, for which means that he'd have to raise his bid by 90 million euros more. Now, at the moment, everything's kind of on hold. The Soros representatives have flown back to the States. Rossella Sensi, the woman who runs the club, has now asked for 48 hours to think about things, because nobody's really sure whether this DIC offer is really there, or whether it's just they're buying for time, playing for time. Equally, amidst all this, there's quite a major political move to not allow foreign ownership into Serie A. Galliani, in fact, the vice president of Milan, and obviously connected with Berlusconi, who's now the president of, prime minister of Italy, rang up Roma at the start of all this negotiation, saying, listen, you have to hold firm. Don't sell up to foreign ownership. We don't want to go down that road in this country, because, you know, there isn't a similar situation there. And I think they do regard what has happened to the Premier League, whilst in some ways there's a lot of envy, and in others I think that they regard it as a very risky way to proceed. So there is this suspicion that that's why the Sensi family have suddenly put the brakes on. But the fans in Rome are deeply upset. They feel that they're being held prisoner by the Sensi family. This would be the second time that a really huge offer for the club hasn't gone through. 4 years ago, there were some Russian oligarchs, or gasgarchs, I don't know what you call them, who were about to take over, and they got so upset by the constant raising of the price that they walked away. Elsewhere on the football side of things, top four races as it was. Milan won 5-1 at home, which was huge. A hat-trick from Kaká. Sampdoria also won 3-0 against Udinese, so they're still level on points. Four behind Fiorentina, who beat Palermo 1-0. Fiorentina, though, facing a tricky week. They've got Rangers on Thursday, and then they're going to be hosting Sampdoria, who, as I mentioned, are 4 points behind us. That's an absolutely huge game next weekend. And that could play a major role in determining who gets that fourth spot. The only other thing I would mention was the crazy Parma-Napoli game, which descended into various fistfights, etc., after the referee lost the plot, gave two completely non-existent penalties, handed out five red cards. And then at the end, and there are all sorts of suspicions about this in one or two Italian papers, because at the end, it looked like Parma players were chasing down one or two Napoli players as if to get retribution. The suspicion is that there was a deal for this game to be a 2-2 draw, which didn't go through, and that's why there was so much trouble. Certainly there was a bizarre bit when the Napoli goalkeeper made a real howler to let Lucarelli through for what would have been the equaliser. Parma at this point playing with 8 men against 10. And then a linesman unfortunately called it back for being offside, which it was, and that's when tempers really boiled over.
Was the linesman not in on the...
Apparently not. I don't know.
I can top that, actually.
He got a better offer.
There was a Gaelic football match on in Dublin yesterday, or Dublin against Meath, and there were 4 men sent off in the first 2 minutes, which must be some sort of record.
Wow, that is a record, actually. Mm. Now, I should stress there's absolutely no evidence of this, and some other papers are saying that it was just a badly officiated game, nothing more.
The suspicions, why do they suggest that a 2-2 draw would have suited both teams? Was it a betting syndicate involved? Why not a 1-1 draw?
No, the suspicions that there are, I think, are that it is, as I say, what they term a white fix, i.e. one that's nothing to do with any money being paid or gambling syndicates or anything, just a team that's in trouble asking their fellow professionals to lend them a hand. You know, don't do any damage where you don't need to. And this kind of thing is quite documented as a happening, not just in Italy, but in Spain, as it often tells us about, towards the end of the season when one team has something to play for and the other team doesn't. So, you know.
But in Spain, money changes
hands. Well, there is this maliatin, isn't there? In Italy, there isn't... I remember talking to a player who says when he joined an Italian club and they sat down and they said, OK, well, we're going to play this team down South Bari and we're not going to win the game. And so, you know, just don't push yourself. And they went around the room. They said, is that OK? And everyone went, yeah. And it came to him and he said, no. And they all laughed at him and said, oh, the English. So he went out and he played and within 15 minutes, they took him off because he was obviously trying far too hard. So, yes, it does happen, or it certainly has happened in the past. However, various other papers saying, no, it's just a badly officiated game. Don't get your knickers in a twist. I believe that is all the time that we have for today's pod. The oxygen running low, Barry.
We need to give a small shout-out to our celebrity chum, one of our very few celebrity chums, Paul Ince, who's MK Dons got promoted.
Did they get the draw?
They won on Saturday.
Well done.
But they made heavy weather of it, but they're up. Right. They're promoted League One next
they're
season.
They're in League One and winners, of course, of the Johnston.
Is he the player that was trying too hard against Barry?
No, he wasn't. Fundament 666, congratulations on your extraordinary ability to be first.
what an achievement.
Right, well,
what a gift he had.
You try and beat him then and then tell me if it's an achievement or not.
No, I've...
Barry is Fundament 666.
I have better things to do, my friend. Right. Should he not apply himself to something more worthwhile? You know, how many baked beans can he eat in a minute with a cocktail stick or something?
There's a challenge for you, Fundament 666. Whoever you may be, because as Paul was just hinting there is a large body of opinion that he actually resides within these walls.
Is there?
Yeah, well, the theory is that's how he's able to post first every week.
I would hate to think that any of my colleagues are sad enough to devote so much time and energy.
Take a look outside, Barry. Okay, on the subject of posts, just as we round up today's Marathon Football Weekly, Shoshafe, is that how you pronounce that?
Shoshafe. Yes, the Irish
okay.
for Joe.
Well, post of the week for your magnificent tinypick.com link to that brilliant animation of Wenger and the boys dancing in the back of a 4x4. If you haven't seen it, the address is http://i30.tinypick.com/jr4r3s.jpg. Believe me, it's long, but it's worth it. It is worth it. Absolutely stonking. I cried looking at that. Instant thought. Enjoyed the show, particularly the return of Paul Doyle and French football. There you go, Paul. James, what are the plans for Euro 2008? Daily dosage of pod? Yes, indeed, they are. Instant thought in Montreal, Canada. We'll get back to you on the details, but The Guardian will be bringing you updates every day on, pretty much every day, on, most days anyway, when there's something to update, on the whole business of the European Championships. Quite a thought, eh, Barry Glendinning?
It is very much a thought.
It certainly is. Well, with that, Can I just thank any survivors out there in listener land?
If there's anyone left listening at this
can you please
stage,
come
I'll
and get
astonished.
Us out of here? Right. Send help. Okay, producer Canby, nice beard you got growing there. Nice one. Right. And Barry Glendenning.
I've just realised how much like Craig David, producer Canby, looks.
He'll certainly have to rewind after this one.
Yes.
Won't he? Woo.
That's why he's always tired on Thursdays, because he's been making love on Wednesday.
Oh dear. Paul Doyle. As I say, the oxygen ran out some time ago. And thanks, Paul. And you, Kevin McCarra.
Thanks, James. Goodbye.
And, of course, you, the listeners. God bless. We'll be back on Thursday for what I imagine might be a slightly more concise and to the point Football Weekly Extra. See you then.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.